Welcome to the first Phil and Lisa Ruin the Movies of 2016. I am your hostess, Lisa Schmeiser. With me, as always, is Philip Michaels.
Hello, people.
Mm-hmm. And you'll be thrilled to know that one of our New Year's resolutions for 2016 was to record this show more often.
Mm.
Since technically the year started on Monday, it's the Lunar New Year.
Yep, it's a new, brand new year.
I think we take the Lunar New Year for the win.
Ignore that first month where we took a knee.
I feel like CES sort of suspends the rules of normalcy, so we can, I think, and also February is a terrible month. It's a hot, flaming garbage sack of a month. And yep. So I say what we do is
filled
we,
with garbage movies that people are rushing into the theater under cover of darkness.
So why not just take your wins where you can, i.e. the Lunar New Year,
yep.
And then let's take our losses where we can, i.e. the trailers that we've seen recently.
Mm-hmm.
Would you like to talk about any one trailer that stuck out for you, Phil, or shall I get started?
Why don't you get us started, Lisa?
So Phil and I recently went to see Star Wars The Force Awakens. It was my third time, it was his first, and there were a couple of trailers, one of which was Captain America, Everyone Is in This Movie.
Yes, which we've talked about
extensively.
Enough.
Yeah, no.
Enough. No more Captain America.
There really is nothing new to add to the trailer.
Yeah.
But one we saw for the first time together was the trailer for The Jungle Book.
Yeah.
This disturbing live-action CGI hybrid does all manner of things wrong, up to and including Scarlett Johansson voicing the largest snake we've ever seen.
Scarlett Johansson is the voice of Ka.
Yes.
For those of you familiar with the Jungle Book. And what this seems to be is, it seems to be sort of, if you took the Disney animated movie from the 1960s that I think people are familiar with. Did you ever see it?
Yeah, I think it...
It had Sebastian Cabot and Phil Harris and all those people. And Louis Prima does the monkey.
Yeah.
And it's a delightful time. And then there have been...
I mean, it's basically like a hooray colonialism.
Yeah.
But, you know, again...
But that's Rudyard Kipling, baby.
And consider when it was made, too.
Yeah.
So...
And every so often, people do a live-action one where it's, you know, animals, but there's no talking or singing.
Yeah.
Where, and this seems to be a glorious hybrid of those two ideas, because you have...
A terrible mishmash of them both could be another way of putting
it. Yes. And so Scarlett Johansson is Ka, is the snake, and the trailer is mostly her talking to Mogwai.
Mm-hmm.
Mogwai. Yeah.
The boy.
Talking to the kid.
Yeah.
And, oh, hey, it's all right. Let me comfort you. And then at the end of the pullback, and it's a big honking snake.
Yeah, it's like big enough to make Australians nervous big.
Which is, some of us don't like snakes.
Phil really hates snakes.
Some
for those of,
us,
of you listening at
yes.
home.
Me and Indiana Jones have two things in common. We are both proficient with a bullwhip. And
I feel like this is a marital skill you could have deployed earlier in our relationship.
Yes, we're proficient with a bullwhip. We are friends with a little tiny boy named Short Round.
I thought it was you guys both modeled your look on Charlton Heston in The Greatest Show on Earth.
Well, that too.
Uh-huh.
I'm running the circuit now. Well, we won't get into that. And the third thing we have in common with Indiana Jones is snakes. Why did it have to be snakes? I don't want to see snakes.
No.
If there is a snake in a movie, I don't want to be there. If there is a snake with Scarlett Johansson's voice, now I'm confused sexually.
Yes. Because Scarlett Johansson. She was on your laminated list.
Pretty easy on the eyes. I will watch anything Scarlett Johansson does. I am not going to watch her be the voice of a foul, disgusting snake. I see snakes, I call in the airstrikes.
Yeah. And you also leap in the air. You have an impressive vertical leap when it comes to snakes.
Yes.
Although, to be fair, so Phil hates snakes. I drag Phil hiking.
You don't drag me. I enjoy the hikes.
I can think of no fewer than three, four separate occasions over the last 6 years where we've gone hiking.
Mm-hmm.
A common garter snake has slithered across our path.
We didn't know that at the time, that it was a garter snake. It could have been any kind of snake.
I knew it at the time, and a common garter snake would go slithering across the path, and Phil would impress and Phil would execute an impressive vertical.
Yeah.
And
little Phil-shaped cloud where I used to be standing.
No, there's basically like a black hole. There's a void. Physics wobbles for a moment, and then Phil comes back again. I think my favorite time was when I was very pregnant, and you jumped off and ran and left me to deal with the mystery of time. But I stress again, it was just a garter snake. It was cute.
I knew you could handle it.
Yeah, exactly.
And, yeah.
Yeah. So that's Phil's relationship to snakes. Phil formerly had Scarlett Johansson on his laminated list.
She's off now.
Yeah.
Gone.
No, it's a pity.
No. Snake lady.
Well,
a common snake lady.
Well, the snake didn't bother me. How do you feel about Medusa?
Not a fan?
Yeah.
Not a fan. Do not like the Clash of the Titans with the Medusa.
Nightmare Fuel?
No.
So yeah, the snake didn't bother me too much, but I have found, and I think we've talked about this before, an unfortunate side effect of this whole having a small human thing is when a trailer features several shots of a child about to be eaten by a giant predator.
Yes.
It makes me deeply uneasy. I don't like children in peril stakes.
You do not.
And so that's why I found this trailer very hard to watch. Also, there are sequences that are uncomfortably close to the movie Congo.
Mm.
Yeah.
Well, because they...
Because there's temples and apes.
Yeah, well, because they bring back the King Louie character, who, as I said, was voiced by Louis Prima in the delightful animated movie. Christopher Walken is going to be the voice of King Louie in this one.
You know, it
children,
must...
Children, bring me the gift of man's fire, children.
Don't make me tell you about the scooching again.
Don't make me ask about the scooching.
But to hearken all the way back to like 1995, I went to see Congo in the theater on a dare, and it's a spectacularly bad movie that features an army of primates and lots of abandoned temples, and it's not a good sign when I watch your movie. My husband is whimpering in fear because a sexy snake is terrifying him, and then we flash to a scene that is basically a shot-for-shot remake of Congo.
Yeah.
And then children are then there's attempted child eating every 30 seconds. So I don't have high hopes for this film, but I'm also not the audience because, again, most of the audience, it's a safe bet to say most of America has not ever seen Congo. So they're not going to go,
Yeah, no, this is going to be one of those.
I wish you all well. Have fun.
Disney kid movies, I think, tweens, like the High School Musical. They're gonna come out of the High School Musical and go to the Jungle Book, and
you're gonna have like an entire generation of young men who are incredibly confused as to why they like boa constrictors.
Yes, it's like the Spartacus. I like the snails and the.
I like that. I like that python. I'm not sure why.
I've got a funny feeling in
the python
swimsuit areas because of the python.
Yeah.
So, way to go, Disney. You've confused America.
Yeah, the only worthwhile Disney snake there ever was Sir Hiss.
Well, sure.
Yeah, I love the Robin Hood movie.
Yeah.
If they make that live action, I'm bombing Anaheim and Burbank.
Well, technically, they did do a live action. But the Errol Flynn.
No, I'm talking about the Robin Hood animated movie.
Oh!
Like if they make little foxes.
With an animatronic fox.
Like if they make foxes wear little coats and talk.
A CGI bear, Little John.
Yeah.
A CGI tiger, King John.
Well, it could be worse. It could be stop motion Wes Anderson doing it.
Oh God! Like the Fantastic Mr. Fox,
which I like. I like that movie.
Really,
I do.
I did not see it.
I think we've talked about Wes Anderson before. If we haven't, I admire his total commitment to his aesthetic vision.
Sure.
I am impressed with the level of detail he executes and a lot of the historical references and stylistic odes that he packs into his look and feel. So I loved the Fantastic Mr. Fox for that. That said, he'd be the worst person in the world to reinterpret Robin Hood in that particular medium of puppets. Mm-hmm. So leave the movie alone. I leave Burbank alone. That is the deal we can make.
Owen Wilson would be Robin Hood, I assume.
Oh, God. See, now you're...
now I'm casting it. Luke Wilson would be Little John.
Well, I love Owen Wilson so much.
Bill Murray would probably be King John or Prince John.
Oh, that'd be the greatest thing ever then.
Yeah. See? Now.
Oh.
Now you want it to happen.
It's the temptation of Lisa. Mm-hmm. Oh. Oh, actually, speaking of Owen Wilson...
Yes.
Zoolander 2.
Yes.
Yeah.
You are looking very much forward to this. You are a big fan of the Zoolander.
Big fan of the original Zoolander movie.
It's all right.
Well, it hits most of my laugh buttons.
Yes.
First of all, the fact that Hansel walks around, like, his first introduction, it's essentially like a bad 1990s Toad the Wet Sprocket video, and it works beautifully. And in the first one as well, there were a lot of really deft jokes that just kept zinging along. Everybody seemed to be in on the joke and sending up the fatuousness of an industry that had kind of not noticed that the world had overtaken it.
Mm-hmm.
Fashion has had a lot of challenges and a lot of changes in the subsequent 15 years.
Yeah.
So that's number one. Number two, I have a weird relationship to the Ben Stiller stuff.
You do. This is why...
All right,
it always surprised me that you like Zoolander because... I would not say that you have a weird relationship with Ben. You have a hostile relationship with
Ben Stiller. I really liked him in The Royal Tenenbaums, though. I thought he was phenomenal. Because the thing about Ben Stiller is he's hostile.
Yeah.
I'm not hostile. He's hostile.
Oh, it's all him.
It's all him.
He's the one that started it.
I'm just a mirror holding his own reactions. Comes the moment the podcast I love is just when I make you laugh. No, but you have to admit that Ben Stiller's comedy always has this undercurrent of hostility. And hostile comedy is fine because it's something that a lot of comics traffic in. But the thing that's always made me a bit uncomfortable and put off by Ben Stiller's hostility is it's gilded with entitlement. Like, this is a dude who's legitimately aggrieved that he's not 6 feet tall and a conventional leading man and that people are not lining up to recognize his genius. Like, that tends to come through in his stuff. And it's got a tiny edge of contempt to it, too.
Mm.
And for some reason, none of that all of that works in Zoolander. Like, it works because he sends up the entire notion of biological privilege in Zoolander.
Yeah. You know? I think the self-loathing Ben Stiller stuff works best, like Tropic Thunder.
Yeah.
And, what was that movie he made? Tia Leone was in it.
There was an arc. And the dude from 6 Feet Under was with Josh Brolin. They were married. Yes. Married FBI agents.
Yes, Lily Tomlin and Alan Alda.
Something Disaster?
Flirting with Disaster.
Yeah, okay.
There. Hey, we pieced it out.
This is why we're married. This
yes.
is, you know, there is actually something I want to talk to you about with that, where apparently there's something called cognitive distribution or cognitive sharing, uh-huh. which is when you're in a long-term relationship with someone, you actually do kind of collectively pool your brain power.
Oh.
And there are things you deliberately don't remember because you know you can rely on your partner to remember them for you.
I wonder if Ben Stiller and Luke Wilson have that going for them in the Zoolander.
No, because it's Owen Wilson.
Oh! I don't think enough of the Wilsons to keep them straight.
No.
Ruth Wilson. Woodrow Wilson, is he in the picture?
You don't have to think about Ruth Wilson until season 3 of The Affair.
Yes. All right.
But,
so I'm always suspicious of sequels that arrive
15 years
more than a decade after the original.
So, yeah, that's part of my problem with this is it's so distant that you have to... It would be like an Austin Powers sequel arriving at this point where you're just like, what is the point? You may as well just revive him from the 1990s and call it retro.
Let me spin you a tale.
Uh-huh.
One of my favorite movies is Chinatown.
Yes.
Which is, a delightful film noir. Jack Nicholson, Faye Dunaway, great movie. Mm-hmm. Screenplay by Robert Towne.
Yeah.
Directed by that terrible man who we won't speak his name, but he made a heck of a movie.
That's what we're going to have to discuss at some point, is when do you separate the artist from the Attila from the art,
yes.
from the horrible, horrible things he does?
Well, apparently I've done it very well because I still like that movie.
Oh, yeah.
So
you
flash ahead 16 years later and they finally make a sequel to it called The Two Jakes. And by this point, I think Nicholson and Robert Towne had a falling out because Robert Towne was going to direct it.
Mm-hmm.
But then he wasn't, so Nicholson directed it.
Mm-hmm.
And it is a bloated, confused, sad, not at all good movie. And I remember just sitting in the theater being so excited to see the sequel to this movie I loved.
Yeah.
And just being deflated as it wore on.
Almost like watching The Phantom Menace.
Yeah. Precisely, like watching The Phantom Menace.
Yeah.
And I fear Zoolander might be a similar experience for you.
The thing that worries me about Zoolander, too, the first thing is it appears to be really tight with the fashion industry this time, and that is the fastest way to defang something is to give it that sense of belonging.
Yeah.
Because the first time it was poking fun at modeling conventions, it was poking fun at the fact that people become ridiculously successful purely based on accidents of biology. And it was poking fun at people's complicity in this. You know, yes, a perfect idiot can become acclaimed as the pinnacle of male beauty because he happens to have the blue steel, right? And so the fact that this has been co-opted takes all of the fangs out of the funny original, right?
Right.
The second thing that worries me is in the intervening 15 years, we've had Bill Hader doing something called Stefan on Saturday Night Live. Mm. And Stefan was like the next logical step. It was somebody who basically took the Zoolander to the next level. It's super fun. And if you ever see the Stefan bits on Saturday Night Live, they're very funny. They're very random. they turn abstract idiocy into an art form. And there was one episode of SNL where Ben Stiller comes on as Zoolander in a Stefan segment. And I remember watching the two of them together where, you know, Stiller is doing the Zoolander idiocy and Bill Hader is doing the Stefan thing. And what struck me was how flat and one note the whole model idiot thing was compared to the way Hader does Stefan, which is that, you know, yeah, he's shallow and he's vapid, but he contains shallow, vapid multitudes, as it were. There's a sense of eager participation in it, and Zoolander is basically just a very beautiful goldfish. So I almost feel like we've outgrown Zoolander as a culture. I'll be curious to see how I feel after watching the movie tomorrow.
Yes, you're going on the first day. I'm surprised you're not camping out tonight.
No one is going to need to. Mm. No one is going to need to camp out for Zoolander.
So what I'm hearing from you, Lisa, is that Lorne Michaels needs to make a Stefan movie.
No, you're not hearing that at all.
Where would that rank in the pantheon of Saturday Night Live movies? Would it be like It's Pat the Movie or one of the good movies? I guess the first Wayne's World would be the pinnacle of Saturday Night Live movies.
And the funny thing is, if you watch the first Wayne's...
It doesn't hold together at all.
No, it does not.
Is there a...
good SNL movie?
Yeah, I don't think so.
No.
It's all Ladies' Man and Night at the Roxbury.
And to be frank, at this point,
Superstar.
You can't make an SNL movie at this point because it's a money-losing venture. You might as well just pour the money into viral videos.
Yeah.
And that's where they are. So, you know, that's it. But yeah, the Zoolander, I'll go, I'll see it. And I'll try not to be all, yeah. But I'm curious to see how they explain how much fashion has changed in 15 years, if they've noticed it at all, or if it's just going to be more of the, oh, he's old now and he's still dumb and here. Look, selfies are a thing, you know?
You're right.
Because I rewatched Zoolander about a month and a half ago, and what was striking to me was how wrong they were about a lot of jokes about the way people live, like the increasingly tiny phones and stuff like that. And, you know,
now phones are the size of a
child's head.
Yes.
So, you know, well, nobody saw smartphones coming, I guess.
Certainly not Zoolander.
Of course. So, so yeah, that's enough talk about Zoolander, I feel.
Yeah. I am actually, just so that this podcast doesn't always become Phil going, I don't like movies.
You do like movies.
I do like movies.
You like them a lot.
I like lots of them. I like old movies, and that is why I am looking forward to going to see, it's already out in theaters, Hail Caesar.
I know, I can't wait.
This is, I actually watched that trailer to be happy.
Yeah.
And
you should, because the trailers have been reliably hilarious.
And it is like they have made a movie specifically for me.
You've never actually seen anything with Channing Tatum in it, have you?
I think I have. No. No, I haven't.
No.
Actually.
No.
No, he's basically...
He's playing Gene Kelly.
He's playing Gene Kelly. Yeah. Scarlett Johansson.
She's back
on the list. She's playing Esther Williams in this.
Yeah.
And they've given her just a hilarious...
New York accent.
Yep.
Yeah.
And you've got your Josh Brolin as the studio fixer.
As Eddie Maddox.
Yep. And a whole just people ripped from the pages of history. They're doing a horrible swords and sandals epic with George Clooney.
Yep.
And it basically looks like the kind of movie that you are saying, hey, here's the old Hollywood studio system, which
was terrible and repressive and awful.
But wasn't it fun?
Yeah.
And I'm looking. I was momentarily fearful because they're releasing it in February, which again is where movies go to die.
Mm-hmm.
And there was an element of the intolerable cruelty slash lady killers to the trailer, where it's the zany Coen brothers, where they don't really try all that hard.
But even when they don't try all that hard, they manage to. What I'm looking forward to in this movie. Have we talked about Llewyn Davis, Inside Llewyn Davis?
We haven't on this podcast.
Because we watched that together.
Yes,
and
we did.
The movie has stuck with me.
Oh.
And I've been chewing on it for months. Because we both had strong reactions to it.
Negative reactions, I would say. I had a negative reaction to it. It is my least favorite Coen Brothers movie.
So the thing,
there I said it, now I'm kicked out of the club.
No.
Because everyone else seems to like it. I didn't care for it.
Well, the reason I keep chewing on... Inside Llewyn Davis is because And this is what I admire about the Coen Brothers movies, is they never give you clean answers to the questions they raise in the movies. You're left to come up with the answer and then figure out what it says about you. But the two biggest questions that Llewyn Davis raises as a movie, the first one is the question, what is the point to art? Is it worth it when, mm-hmm. when it wrecks your life? When your life is basically, you know, trying to sleep on other people's couches, you're perpetually broken, miserable. Why are you doing it? Where is... what are you getting out of it? What are you giving to the world through it? So that's the first thing is what is the point to art? Why the suffering? And Oscar Isaac plays it very well. Cause he doesn't play it like Kirk Douglas plays,
Lust for Life. Which we've done on the show before.
So no, it's,
I'm an artist and I'm making paintings.
But the second question,
I have so much art inside me.
Yeah. Well, here's, yeah. And that brings me actually to my second point, which mm-hmm. is the second question that Llewyn Davis brings up that I'm still chewing over.
Right.
Is, do we forgive artists only when their work is good, even when their personalities are crappish? Because one of the things that comes out through Llewyn Davis is that, the Justin Timberlake character may not be particularly talented. I mean, he is like a good singer because, it's Justin Timberlake. But the point is, he's not as driven and he doesn't have the same ferocity and raw talent as Llewyn Davis, but he's a lot easier to get along with. So he's getting many more professional breaks. Llewyn Davis is a jerk store.
Yeah.
And the question that this movie raised for me that I'm still chewing over the answer is, who are you or what values compel you to forgive artists their behavior or to hold them to different standards of behavior? Like, I feel the Coen brothers are asking us to consider how we regard artists both in conjunction with the art they make and separately from the art they make.
Mm.
So those are the things I've been chewing on with Llewyn Davis. And I feel like Hail Caesar is going to be one of those movies where maybe they lightly toss those questions out there, but it's mostly going to be about how these people all affect each other. And so I'm looking forward to that because I love a good Coen Brothers movie where it's all of the characters pinballing off of each other affecting each other's orbits and knocking each other out of orbit. Like, that is one of the biggest reasons I love The Big Lebowski.
This strikes me as one of the trilogy of idiots kind of movies that they do along the lines of Burn After Reading or a little bit of Big Lebowski.
Well, the thing about both Burn After Reading and The Big Lebowski is how small the stakes are.
Yes.
And yet how vastly they affect people's lives.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think we're going to get some of that in this one too.
Yeah, exactly.
So, yeah, I'm looking forward to it.
Good, good. And, you know, it seems to be getting... I haven't really looked at the reviews other than to confirm that, no, this isn't going to be Intolerable Cruelty too.
Yeah.
I live in hope, and it's hope that kills you.
Yeah, well, it's hopefully Clooney actually acting and not calling it in, so, you know, we'll go from there.
You never know.
Mm-hmm.
And were we going to talk Gods of Egypt?
Oh, God.
Yes, which we saw, which was...
It's big and dumb and loud and shiny and...
Speaking of swords and sandals movies...
Yeah, that's pretty much what it is.
This is actually a sword and sandal movie released in the 2016th year of our Lord. People are still doing these movies, Lisa.
So
it's like
the thing about here's the fundamental problem with swords and sandals movies is after you've seen Monty Python's Life of Brian, you can't help but wonder why everybody's not dusty.
Yeah.
And the second thing about this movie that like flashed the danger alert is starring Gerard Butler. Yeah.
So is Gerard Butler just going to spend the rest of his career like every so often appearing in a thong and yelling at soldiers?
You know, if he wants to balance his personal life and his work life that way, more power to him.
He must be a fun guy to be around. We are going to the store!
Gerard, do you want to put on a robe?
No!
But it's also got the dude from Game of Thrones, who is kind of like a low-rent Ewan McGregor-looking dude.
Yep.
So they get him they're never going to get Ewan McGregor for this, let's face it.
No.
He's got Star Wars money.
Yeah.
But you take a look at who's in this movie.
Rufus Sewell!
And it's not like Rufus Sewell is a bad actor.
No.
It's just that... he has an unerring eye for crap.
Yeah.
It's unfortunate because he can be so good in so many things. And then he'll make something where he's bugging out and giving it his all, and you're like, oh honey, no, this script is just terrible. And we saw the trailer, and it just looks all CGI'd all the time.
Yes,
they haven't bothered to like do anything with the compositing screens, and so you've got like the Egyptian god of manscaping with the
the Egyptian god of manscaping. You know. His temple is immaculate.
That sounds really filthy. Mm-hmm. Oh my god.
Yes.
Mr. Michaels, would you like to end this podcast?
No, my goodness.
But you know, he's up there with, you know, whatever ingenue had to go on the all kale diet to be in this movie, and right. they're busy looking terrified while some sandworm or some giant pyramid comes to life, whatever, and you're just like, No.
Watching the trailer, it was like you got the sense that the filmmaker was going, oh, Dune, I'll take that, and did I'll take this from the 300, and I'll take this from Prince of Persia.
Like, did someone
except
lose
he's a... copying bad movies.
Yeah, Prince of Persia. No, did someone, like, lose a bet? I mean, it just... This whole movie has the stink of having been, like, focus grouped and done by committee, or handed over to somebody's nephew who needed a job, or...
You know, I want to do a movie about the Greek gods. Well, we already did Clash of Titans. Well, let's make it Egyptian gods. It has that sort of spin the wheel of plots, and you get gods of Egypt.
Well, and the pity is that Egyptian gods, when you think about it, they're bleeping terrifying.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, if you saw something with the head of a jackal, can you reason with it? Do you have to communicate in barks? But, you know, instead, what they did in this trailer is it was like this big, shiny chrome dude who flew places. And
yes. Oh, he's the sky god.
It was like a car commercial. Like, you half expect Buick, the Buick Skylark. And
I'm Gerard Butler. This is Buick.
I mean, God bless him for sticking to his core competency.
And Kirk Douglas, you have to drive this car.
He's filled with art and Buick keys.
I'm filled with Buicks.
Oh my gosh. No wonder he cut off his ear. Ah.
Yes. I can even hear the sound system in this car with my ear cut off.
Well, at least Gerard Butler has moved away from I too can be in rom-coms, because that was just a painful and awkward period for everybody.
Well, to be fair, he was starring alongside Jennifer Aniston, who I believe should change her name to Box Office Poison.
She's funny. She's just funny on a small screen.
Yeah.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. No, I saw something today that was so bad I couldn't even watch the trailer.
Really?
Yeah.
Sounds like it's made for this podcast.
Gary Marshall's coming out with a movie called Mother's Day.
Oh no. Really?
Yes.
No, you're fooling me.
No, I'm not.
Mother's Day.
Yes.
To go with Valentine's Day.
And New Year's Eve. Yeah, and it has both Kate Hudson and Jennifer Aniston in it, I guess because they want America to stay home that weekend. And
Gary Marshall's Kwanzaa.
I would totally watch that, actually.
Yeah, I would be pretty good.
Yeah, no, that would be great.
It's Arbor Day, Gary Marshall.
Labor Day.
Yeah.
Yeah, where it's just people on a beach looking very sad that their summer is over.
No, it's basically actors giving speeches about unions.
Oh my god, yeah, that'd be great.
And then falling in love, because it's Gary Marshall!
Yeah, no, this thing is about Mother's Day, and I couldn't even bring myself to click on the trailer once I saw who was starring in the movie.
Mm-hmm.
And it just is part of that whole... That whole ethos of, look, it's a bunch of, you know, pretty white ladies who have pretty white lady problems together. Like, I feel like that is something we should have shot and buried behind the barn in, like, the 1990s. It was embarrassing in the aughties when it started rolling out, too, for heaven's sake. So, did not watch that trailer at all.
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Well, that sort of defeats our purpose for this podcast.
No, I feel like we're doing a public service by telling people don't click, don't reward them.
Yeah. Well, I believe in...
Did we want to introduce a new segment?
We had introduced it the last time in this podcast. What things that we actually took the time to watch. Because as you know...
We do like the movies.
To repeat the premise of this podcast, we talk about trailers of movies we haven't seen.
To ruin them.
And, and possibly, not in this case with Zoolander and Hail Caesar, which we're going to go see, but movies we have no interest in seeing.
Oh, and before you ask, we're never going to watch the trailer for The Purge 3. Like, we know it exists. We can appreciate that you've asked about it. No, No, we're not watching it. I wish Frank Grillo all the best. I'm glad he has a career. I think that's phenomenal. But still not watching the Purge 3 trailer.
So anyhow.
I think Frank Grillo is bringing it.
The segment that we wanted to introduce is things we actually have watched.
Yes, together even.
Together even.
Yeah.
The other day we watched, and you can tell we have a kid and don't get to movies as often as we would like. It's 2014 all over again.
Yeah.
We watched Kingsman, The Secret Service.
That's 2 hours of our life we're never getting
with
back.
With Colin Firth.
Yeah.
And some young kid. And
Mark Strong.
And some other British people.
Yeah. Well, Mark Strong gave a strong performance, as it were.
Mark Strong, he's the, the tall, bald fellow.
The one I kept saying, are you sure that's not Stanley Tucci? Bring up IMDb.
Yes, Stanley Tucci.
Hey, Stanley Tucci got really ripped for this role.
He's been working out, Stanley Tucci. And, and he's British now.
Yeah, you're like, that's because his name is Mark Strong.
Yes.
And he did well. So it's like the internet. No, we did not like this movie. By the end of it, we were both like, what the hell just happened?
I liked it slightly more than you did, but I did not like it.
Yeah.
And
so I think it's important to note that Kingsman The Secret Service is based on a comic series by Mark Millar. And Mark Millar also is responsible for the source material behind the movie Wanted. And the premise behind Wanted is ordinary Prole discovers he's actually the child of a super secret assassin. He gets tied into a secret organization. Enter women throwing themselves at him, him being allowed to kill without consequence, and having infinite access to cool tools.
Mm-hmm.
Does that sound familiar to
you? Yep, it sounds like this movie.
All over again.
Yeah.
And so we were watching this movie, and basically, it is like somebody cut costs by it. Like, what they did is they fired all the scriptwriters because they were having a spat with the WGA, and then they said, "Bring me a Perl programmer, 1,000 BuzzFeed listicles, 3 internet memes, and Twitter."
Yeah,
and this is the movie that and this is the movie that resulted, because it's like none of the violence has any wit, even though it's trying. There is literally no internal or external logic to be applied to this movie, and it's a pay in to elitist secret societies run by elite people, and the ridiculous crap that they put other people through. A lot of horrible things happen without consequence, and why? So our protagonist can get the chance to sodomize a Swedish princess. No, I am not joking.
That is an interesting synopsis.
And not factually inaccurate, you'll know.
No, not at all.
Yeah, no.
Spoiler.
That is literally the one exchange of human warmth in this movie.
Yeah.
Is when the Swedish princess, who is a prisoner, I would add, tells her would-be rescuer, if you can get me out of this, you can have some backdoor action. And he's like, suddenly I'm incentivized to save the world.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that is your warmth and human connection in this movie.
Yeah, that was a off-putting segment. A lot of this movie,
as is the spy surveillance when they seal the deal.
Yeah, a lot of this movie was really off-putting to me. It was from the political point of view, which at best is nihilistic,
yeah,
and at worst is just a worldview that is actually toxic.
It's like 14-year-olds got together and they're like, everybody in charge is so dumb.
Yeah.
What can we do? And then like, and I hate people too. What can we do? And they came up with a solution, and they had a lisping black man affect the solution, which is not racially loaded or problematic at all.
Mm-hmm.
And
there's a lot of issues in this movie.
The way they set up this horrible massacre scene so as to imply that everybody in the massacre deserves to be killed is
right.
Really awful.
Yeah, it's a Westboro Baptist Church type situation,
yeah.
Where there is this scene that starts out very excellently filmed of just an insane amount of violence and punching going on, and then it just goes on forever. But
the weird thing is, it's James Gunn who directed it.
Yes.
Oh no, he didn't.
No.
Sorry, no.
You're looking at the
Guardians of the Galaxy.
If you like this movie, you might also like a much better movie that
I won't. Who did direct this, honey?
It was the fellow who did Kick-Ass, Matthew Vaughn.
Which is weird because I liked Kick-Ass, and I've watched both Kick-Ass and Kick-Ass 2, and what I liked about those is they put their comic level violence in a much more humanistic perspective. Mm-hmm. And I say this as somebody who watched the scene in Kick-Ass 2, which involves using a gun that deploys violent bowel spasms.
Yeah.
Like, and I'm all, ooh, that's a humanistic and nuanced take compared to this movie. So that should tell you what you're dealing with.
I think what sealed the deal for me on this movie, just uh-huh. not being something I enjoyed, is at the end when they're having... You know, the they're in the impregnable fortress, and there's a comical thing where everyone's head is exploding, and they're fighting. You're groaning, but it was okay. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And it's very comic. It's very over the top. It's very much in the vein of some of the scenes in Hot Fuzz. I would compare it to.
Uh-huh. Where they're just killing people
left, right, and center. It's just crazily comically violent, and you're okay. You're feeling okay. I can sort of give myself over to this movie and overlook the fact that it's all sizzle and no steak. Except they have
they intercut this with a kid in peril scene.
They intercut it with a child in peril, and it's not a funny child in peril. It's actually really off-putting, and it just takes me right the hell out of the movie. It's not good. The more I think about the movie, the more I dislike it. And that's, go to Time Machine and don't go back in time and don't go see Kingsman in 2014.
I think you'd be well warned. If the source material is coming from Mark Millar, you're going to have to realize this is somebody who, really delights in telling stories about young men for whom sex and violence are literally interchangeable in terms of the kind of orgasmic pleasure they provide. And the only thing better than sex or violence is consequence-free sex or violence. Like, there is literally nothing else in his work that this is a guy who wants to watch the world burn and then jack off over the smoking remains.
Goodness sakes.
Yeah. Well, and I say this as somebody who, I have Mark Millar's Run on the Authority. So, you know, I've read enough of his oeuvre to know what he's on. Mm. And, you know, having, it's one thing to read it in the comics and be like, oh, that's an interesting choice that colorist made watching that. But it's
another. Do you feel that some things in comics don't translate well to the big screen when it's real people doing it?
I do. I actually have a big problem with that. And I think that's something that we don't talk about enough when it comes to adapting comics. Mm-hmm. And I think it's something that we should examine more when we look at superhero stories. Mm. But with Mark Millar's stuff, I read Wanted. Which is the other movie I've referenced. I read Wanted. I watched the movie, and just like had to go take like a brain bath afterwards. Mm. It's the consequence free, the fact that you as the reader or viewer are being asked to be complicit in a worldview that turns people into objects to be destroyed for your ephemeral pleasure.
Yeah.
Is something I don't want to be party to.
So
you know. No, I'm not watching Queensmen, the sequel, or whatever they want to call it. Yeah. So,
Kingsman 2, even more men who are kings.
Or whatever, yeah.
Yeah.
It's just... Also, I'm tired of the secret cabal premise for everything. It's old and it's tired, the same way I get tired of conspiracy crap on TV.
So I actually saw a movie this week that I would like to recommend. You weren't in the room.
Was I sleeping?
You were asleep. I watched this right after the Super Bowl late at night.
Yeah.
It's 1951's The Tall Target.
Oh, that's hard. I saw that on the TV.
And it was... It's not, I don't think it's a well-known movie. I had never really heard of it before. Yeah. It's Anthony Mann, who I mostly know as a director of Westerns. This one is set in 1851.
Excuse me,
1861. It's on the eve of Abe Lincoln's inaugural.
And
it is actually based on a real factual thing that there was a plot to assassinate then-President-elect Lincoln on his way into...
30 minutes before I fell asleep. Yeah. It was so good, though.
Well, because it is a mystery set on a train where the protagonist has no friends, where everyone might be a suspect, and it is filmed in a peppy style that does not waste a moment. The final scene between the protagonist and the villain is not a really well shot fight scene.
Yeah.
And there's a hokey bit where they're pulling into Washington and there's the Capitol building and the music stirs, and that's not so good.
No.
But
although that's odd, because the scene that I saw right before I fell asleep was the one where the Southern Belle is in the trailer with a young and devastatingly good-looking Ruby Dee plays the slave. And a Yankee woman comes in, a Bostonian, mm-hmm. and they both sides, they have an exchange which is just so comically offensive and makes everybody look awful. What I really appreciated was how level-handed the scriptwriters were, as opposed to casting in simple terms where it's South bad, North good. It's like, no, Northerners were just as capable of generalizations and cruelty mm-hmm. and bigfooting all over conversations and like not winning hearts and minds to their causes. And it did a great job of pointing out this is probably why talks break down. So I loved that scene.
it is a wonderful example mm-hmm. of how you don't need a lot to make a compelling movie, because you're very limited on the sets, you're very limited on the characters, and yet it zips along. It's a nice little long 90-minute thing. I can't recommend it enough.
So remind everybody what it's called again?
It's called The Tall Target.
Is it available on iTunes?
I don't know if it's on iTunes. It pops up Amazon? On Turner Classic every now and again. Powell is the lead actor, and Anthony Mann is the director.
So put that on your wish list for TIFO and see what they do. Yeah.
Or open your iTunes browser right now and see if it's there. Yeah. It's good.
Yeah, I liked the half hour I saw before I fell asleep.
Yep.
I was tired, though. It was no reflection on the movie.
No.
So.
Much better than Kingsman. Much better than Snake Lady, the movie.
Well, Colin Firth, poor guy.
Yeah.
We're both sad just talking about Kingsman.
That plaintive sigh means that's our outro music.
Yeah, I
is
think
a
so.
Plaintive sigh.
Well, thank you so much for tuning in, and we love your tweets, or at least I do. I can't speak for Phil.
No, I enjoy them.
I enjoy knowing that people are out there listening, and
it shocks me that people listen.
We appreciate it, though.
Yeah.
So bear in mind, Year of the Monkey, Phil and I are going to shoot for doing this podcast a little more often.
Yeah.
And please feel free to hold our feet to the fire on this, just so long as you don't ever mention The Purge 3.
Yes. All right. Exactly.
Thank you for tuning in. I was Lisa Schmeiser.
I am still Philip Michaels. I have not changed in the last 40 minutes.
I have.
What? Snake Lady? No!